The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 501, recorded on May 7th, 2018.
Welcome to the 501st edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 334th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Dinser.
I am Scott Gerr.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and a gaming flashback.
All right, so we're redoing 501 because last week's episode, aside from having some technical problems, it just wasn't very good. So there's some news from that week which is still relevant this week, and there's some new news. One of the news that we had last week, that there was going to be a Red Dead Redemption trailer, Red Dead Redemption 2 trailer, and obviously it's already dropped. TJ, did you see it?
I did. I know Rockstar can make good games. It just always makes me nervous about them, because like they're one of the crews that is most notorious about just like not showing off anything at all except for some cinematics.
Yeah, but well,
I remember some build-up for GTA 5.
I will say this. The graphics in it look like they're going to blow away everything else they've ever made.
Oh, yeah. They look like they're going to be a definite, like... They're going to be a selling point for PS4 Pros and Xbox One Xs.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, Xbox, Microsoft has been running their version of the trailer, which tells me that it's going to be enhanced. And that isn't the part for me. Here's the thing. I've never really enjoyed Grand Theft Auto. But I did enjoy a lot Red Dead Redemption. And part of it is that they actually know how to use guns. Because in Grand Theft Auto, shooting a gun was like closing your eyes and hoping it would hit what you wanted it to hit. And the fact they can't really do cars, I mean, cars are sort of floaty and feels like they're going to fly into space and, you know, they're really awkward. The best thing about Red Dead Redemption is there are no cars. Well, there is a car, but you don't drive it.
Yeah, the cars in GTA seemed like they would go off at the slightest touch, unlike in L.A. Noir, where cars seem to, you have to really work at it for a car to get wrecked, it felt like, by comparison.
Well, it's just the handling, you know?
Yeah.
So
they were more stable in L.A. Noir.
And, you know, of course, the trailer is maddeningly silent about what... Here's the thing that I think is going to happen, and it's my prediction, and we'll see if it comes true, in that it'll encompass the entire United States, parts of Canada, and Mexico. That's my prediction.
That sounds just like the first one.
Well, no, the first one only took place in the American Southwest, a little bit in the... In the Rockies, just a little bit, and
you went to Mexico.
It had Mexico as part of it, you know. But I'm talking about even more. Like you can visit the East Coast.
Mm-hmm. That would be cool, I guess.
And it would be sort of like how they do it in Fallout, in which you don't really, you know, have the contiguous, you know, like when you're in Fallout, you go to the pit, Pittsburgh, you know, and you would just it would be like attached this whole other area over here. So it wouldn't be like you could ride from one side of the United States to the other. I just mean, you know, areas.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, TJ? What is your prediction?
I mean, it takes place in the time before the first Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah,
we
see Jack getting his scars. Not Jack, John.
Yeah.
Jack
and so, I don't know. I think they're going to play around with I'm willing to bet that they'll probably have a few familiar places like Blackwater and, yeah, and...
You know what I'd like to say? I'd like to see Blackwater before it came a thieves' den.
Mm-hmm. What was the major town where like, the civilized town? I can't remember. But,
that place with the bricks and all that, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like there's going to be, like, reworked versions of these particular, like, major places, but just, like, a spread-out map beyond that. I mean, it's... I've already seen... Like, I've seen places in the game that kind of look like Blackwater already. Even if like, just sort of similar.
I know we're going to have a lot more activities and a lot more gambling.
Yes. I'm really hoping that they bring... I'm really hoping that they expand some of that stuff into the online play, because I wouldn't mind playing a little bit of like blackjack on online play, playing some of the activities like that. Yeah. They did a little bit of that in the first game, but like really, it was really limited.
Well, they also had the multiplayer, and it's going to be interesting what they do with the success of Grand Theft Online, Grand Theft Auto Online. It'll be interesting to see, and I think that's why it's also going to be bigger, is that it's going to be like almost MMO-ish, the online game. It's not going to have the MMO, you know, things like leveling up and all that stuff, but it's going to have that feel of being in this huge world that you can do stuff in. I just hope they take care of the griefing.
Yeah, that was a really annoying aspect.
My staff and I have been talking about whether or not they're going to put a Battle Royale into this game in some way.
Yeah, there's been a lot of people talking about Battle Royale this, Battle Royale that. Wasn't that one of the jokes? It was Red Dead Redemption Battle Royale or something like that?
Uh-huh. Somebody made like a smash cut of a whole bunch of different popular franchises, Royale.
Well, not all of them Royale. One of them was the... what was it? The dark version of a Nintendo game? I forgot it. Oh, well.
One of them was Smash Bros. Royale.
Right. So, anyways, we're going to move on to what have you been playing. I'll start first. I had backed this on Kickstarter. I forgot that I had gotten a code, but I got Battletech on my Steam page now. I mean, on my Steam library. I haven't started playing it, but I did play it when it was an Amiga game. It was really, really cool. And, you know, there's something to be said about a turn-based tactical strategy game with mechs. And the one thing you have to understand about Battletech is that they really get deep into tactics. Like, you can shoot limbs off, right? Or you can have, like, a machine gun, you know, a Gatling gun, which doesn't heat up, so you don't have to worry about heat, you don't have to worry about heat sinks. And yes, you have to worry about heat sinks when you're building your mechs, you know, because you have to have something that drains off the power that they're doing. But if you use the Gatling gun, there's a chance if they shoot off your arm, it'll make the bullets in that arm explode, causing extra damage.
Nice. I remember the last time I played a Battletech game was, I played MechWarrior Online back when, but yeah. I think before it went free to play.
That was a shooter. This is a tactical strategy game. And it's like, I don't know if you ever saw the Amiga version of Battletech, which the same guy, Harebrained Schemes, did. And it was really fun. And they have a lot of lore over the past 20, 30 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the coolest things I've always loved about MechWarrior is customizing the robots, like, and working your way up. In MechWarrior Online, you actually worked your way up to, like, a worthwhile machine. And I remember, like, my machine that I eventually worked my way up to was a Cicada, yeah. which is a two-legged sort of medium tank style. I decked it out to go real fast as a Jenner, but also have, like, a mid-range level weaponry. So I could actually, like, strafe atlases and take them down.
Here's the thing. In Battletech, it's, you know, when you get to the really big robots, they're so big they can't use jump jets anymore. And as a matter of fact, they're like the starter mechs that you had. They'll look like fleas next to the things. They'll be gigantic.
Yeah, atlases are enormous. They, like, the Jenner is about a third of the size of an Atlas.
Yeah. So, I also have a game... I also got a review code for a game called Starship Corporation. And it's a game in which you build starships. And you send them off on missions. Or you can build starships for other people. I haven't started it yet. I'm still getting through the tutorial. It's interesting. It's one of those indie games... And I was hoping it might be something like FTL, but it's not. It's more of a business game.
Hmm. that's an interesting take on that style.
Yeah. It's building management and simulation. But you, if you send them out on things, like you can send them out, you start your business, you could either just build starships for other people, or you can start building, say, your own shipping company, you know, that sort of thing. So it's pretty flexible. I haven't gotten deep into it yet. I'll let you know what I think. I also started playing, and it's because it's free on Xbox Live Gold, is Super Mega Baseball 2. And I destroyed the computer, but that's because I had an ego of 15, which means it wasn't the easiest. Next game I play, I'm going to jack it up all the way to the max, just to see, you know, because the game, I'm too familiar with the series. Did we discuss Lucky's Tale?
Yes, we did.
Yes, we did.
Last week, the episode that we recorded and didn't do.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so yeah, it's the game that Ukulele wishes it was. It's easier, but not really. I mean, it has a faux easiness. It's like, oh yeah, this is a piece of cake. Then you get to some of the things, and it's like, oh wait, this is crazy. But it's not hair-pullingly tough like Ukulele is, you know. And I know TJ is thinking about how many hours he had to spend because he was doing a strategy guide on the thing. And it's like, you won't have the same frustration that you have in Ukulele. It's the best Rare game that Rare never made.
One of the things you mentioned last when you were talking about it is that it still has that sort of issue with the camera.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything you can do about it, though. That sort of game, you know, I don't know if it's... You can't do anything about it. It's just... I mean, I guess you can. But I don't know. It's the one bad thing. It's... That you can say about it is that it has the bad camera, and the bad camera is your worst enemy.
It really is, because that's half the problem with Ukulele, is that you're fighting against the camera half the time.
Mm. Anyway, the developer's Playful. Playful Corp. But yeah, it looks fantastic, especially if you're playing it on 4K, and, you know, I would recommend it. It's a good game, and it's a good alternative to Ukulele or Banjo-Kazooie. Although I will say they have this thing. They go between having the main character say these single words like, "All right!" and everybody else does the Ukulele / Banjo-Kazooie wah, 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 talking, which I cannot stand.
Oh, yeah, instead of actual words, just like the rambling mumble.
They're trying to go for the Nintendo 64 3D platformer style, you know, but here's the thing, you should just ditch. By the way, I didn't know this before, but it's actually a sequel to Lucky's Tale, which was a 3D platformer on the Oculus Rift.
They're doing Lucky's Tale on Oculus Rift?
That was like in 2016.
Oh.
Super Lucky's Tale is the sequel.
Ah.
So yeah.
Interesting.
And for those who are interested in it and have the Game Pass, it's now free on Game Pass. And it's also Play Anywhere. So, TJ, what have you been playing?
I've been doing Dad of War. God of War 2018.
Okay.
And I'm having a good time with it. It's really... People have been talking... people are talking it up as much as people are going to talk it up, and I'm just adding to the fracas on that. But, like, I will go ahead and say that most of it is true.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. God of War 1, 2, and 3 just made me not want to see Kratos ever again. I don't care what the story is. I don't care if he's a nice guy or if he has character development.
He's not a nice guy.
I just don't care about him.
Yeah, he's still a jerk. He's gruff and mean and gives no shits. The character that matters is Atreus.
His son, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I don't care. Sony Santa Monica soured me on the character and the franchise forever.
Well, it's a new director. It's a new game style. It's a lot of different beats from old stories. Like, it's taken quite a departure at this point from what it was. And I'm one of the people that's listened. Like, I've seen and I've listened to all of the complaints about the old series, and I agree with most of those things because it is a mindless hack and slash, except for a few puzzles. Mm-hmm. But God of War 2018 is not. It is a methodical thing, with an actual story that actually tries to go for an emotional response, as to just meatheadedly banging your head against the enemies until they fall down.
Well, my emotional response is still Revulsion. So, I mean, heck, I like Marcus Fenix, and I still haven't played any Gears of War game since 2.
Yeah, and I mean, I've been playing through the game a lot, and I think one of the reasons why it resonates with me a lot is because I just finished watching Logan again. And God of War 18, its story beats hit me in a lot of similar ways that just make me feel tingly inside. It's a really interesting journey.
Yeah, I wonder if Devolver Digital is going to have their free beer again so you can have another tingly moment.
I hope so. That would be nice.
Yeah, Devolver Digital and their little private E3 away from the show floor.
Their E3 away from E3 because yeah. F the ESA.
Yeah. So, Scott, tell us how you abandoned, Monster World.
Yeah, I'm playing Dark Cloud 2, so I'm too busy playing 90s games to play anything new.
Well, before you talk about that, now I believe last week in the episode that we recorded but didn't publish, that you just got tired of Monster Hunter World.
Yeah, I just not feeling it. I mean, I wish I did, and it just I don't really care about the characters. There's just the story doesn't really seem cohesive to me. Everything just seems kind of to be randomly happening. I fought a big rock lizard, and then suddenly this elf dude shows up, and my handler's like, "Oh, is he?" And I'm like, "I don't know who the fuck he is. Tell me who he is. I have no clue." And so he's some dude, I guess, from the First Fleet, and I guess they're the First Fleet, whatever that means. And I don't know, just. I'm not feeling. I need story, you know. And it's fun fighting big giant bosses, but it's like I need something to chew on, and just fighting bosses all the time. And it's like, and this is a grinding game. People grind against these bosses, and that just seems so tedious.
Yeah, I mean, I ran into similar problems with what you're dealing with. I had no problems dealing with everything up to and a little after near Gigante. Mm-hmm. When you get to a certain point where I will say you start fighting, tracking several legendary beasts, then it starts to get grindy, and then it starts to get less fun.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pretty good run for 2/3 of the main game. Then it starts to give way. I feel like it starts to lose some of its ingenuity, some of its creativity, and just sort of fall back on some old and just boring video game mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about Dark Chronicle, aka Dark Cloud 2. So this is a remake of the PS2 game, right?
Yes, and you go through various dungeons collecting geostones to restore cities, and basically what's happening is this: there's this like evil emperor in the past who's destroying your present timeline, which is destroying a future timeline where this character Monica comes to find you, and you go on this quest basically to restore these origin points that this emperor is destroying. And so you have this very crazy story like right there, and I'm having fun with it because you have a crafting system where you take pictures, and you get ideas, and then you put together your weapons, and you can also put together items for your town.
You're playing Not Link.
Yeah, but Not Link. Yeah, you're Not Link at all.
You know what I like, actually, is the fact that one thing that this game has over Zelda is that it actually has a mini-map that you can use.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I'm having fun playing that game. The music's fun, and there's a lot of little side stuff you can do, like earning medals in the dungeons by killing monsters only with one type of weapon or with one character.
It seems to me that this would be a good game to play after playing Monster Hunter, because Monster Hunter is so convoluted, and it's like Dark Lotus. Okay, you're out there. You can craft here, fight things. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's like less work and more just getting down to it.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So I'm having fun playing that. And tomorrow is Pillars 2, so that's what I'll be playing next week when we record the next episode is Pillars 2. Deadfire.
By the way, my next Gamefly game is going to be Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy.
Okay.
You know, it's a good time for me to start playing some straight-up game show games. I mean, I will say, you know, at PAX East, I was enjoying Jackbox, so it's sort of like, yeah, I just want to chill out and do some trivia now.
Okay.
It's funny is that they're actually doing a Wheel of Fortune video game, and they want a male model for the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me think, gee, I wonder if the game's going to let you opt between Vanna and this new dude to fit your tastes. So, anyways. We're going to move on to the gaming flashback, which is Wii Music. Take it away, TJ.
Wii Music is a music video game developed and published for Nintendo for the Wii video game console. The game was released in Japan and North America in October 2008, and in Europe and Australia in the following month. Wii Music is a part of Nintendo's Touch Generations brand and the Wii series. Wii Music focuses on creating arrangements of existing songs by controlling the members of an on-screen band. In order to do so, players choose from a wide selection of musical instruments that are played by mimicking the required actions using their Wii remote and nunchuck. So much like Wii Sports, except for you're just pretending to stroke a violin instead of bowling. Unlike other music games, such as Guitar Hero and Rock Band, players are not scored on their performance and are encouraged to experiment with different ways to play various songs.
In which, you know, that just is like, there's no game there. You don't have to worry about pressing the right buttons. Just mash away. We don't care.
Mm-hmm. Shake the nunchuck like you don't care.
Just make sure the wrist strap is on.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Stop throwing the nunchuck into the TV.
Yeah, that was by the way, I don't know if we discussed this before, but that was a major problem in 2006 to 2007, which is why they suddenly started selling Wii straps for the Wiimote, so that you couldn't let go of it. I can't imagine people being that clumsy, even if they have sweaty hands. How do you just throw your Wiimote or nunchuck with such force that it actually breaks your TV?
I don't know. I guess some people just didn't get the concept, or I don't know. It baffles me, too.
Well, I mean, the Wii motion controls were not that great at first. That's why they eventually invented the Wii Motion Plus, which fine-tuned it a little bit. So I can imagine there were some people out there getting increasingly frustrated as things like lagged behind or didn't work at all, until finally they just gave it a fling.
Just go down to Game Offers a Selection.
All right. The game offers a selection of 66 playable instruments, including the violin, drum, cowbell, flute, clarinet, saxophone, harmonica, piano, guitar, trumpet, harp, shamisen, maracas, sitar, and marimba, as well as unconventional instruments such as dog and cat sounds, pseudo-doo-wop, vocals for a singer, karate shouts, black belt, cheerleader cheers, and 8-bit sounds.
You know, anybody who did the dog or cat or anything like that made me want to punch him in the face for even selecting that. That was the most annoying sounds ever, the non-musical sounds. Now, keep in mind, we have to discuss, the Wii Music was done in MIDI, completely in MIDI. And while MIDI is really cool, I mean, I used to have on my old hard drive, I had 500 songs and things in MIDI. Because part of what was useful is that a lot of keyboards, you could transfer the MIDI music onto a keyboard and have it play on the keyboard with actual instruments. But Jesus Christ, it was just like fingers on a chalkboard. Those the cat and dog sounds. Meow, 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 meow.
Yeah, this was like my first Casio. I'll get to that in a little bit.
Oh my god.
To play each of the instruments, players mimicked the on-screen motions with the Wiimote and Nunchuck. Because of varying techniques required to play different instruments, the instruments in Wii Music are divided into groups to which certain movements or button presses play single notes. But back to what I was saying, this is literally like a baby's first Casio, in which you have the dog, the cat, the frog, the pig, the violin, the trumpet, and you just press any one of those buttons and you get that set of notes.
Yeah. Now, let's go back to 2006 now. And we have to talk about Nintendo's E3 2006, in which one of the things they showed was the Wii Music, and that was when Nintendo, flush with all the people buying Wiis who had no interest in video games, decided, hey, those are the people we want to cater to. And then you had the E3 performance and debut of Wii Music. I was in the audience. It was cringeworthy. Now, yeah, you guys watched it because I sent you the video of the low lights of that conference.
Yeah. And yeah. Watching that video, Reginald and the lady there, they just looked like they had never touched.
And Cammy Dunaway.
Yeah, it looked like they had never touched a game controller in their lives. That's how awkward it was.
Well, I mean, to be fair, you know, Reggie Fils-Aimé knows something about video games, but Cammy Dunaway was just there for a paycheck for several years.
Yeah.
And after she left the Nintendo, she said she was so happy to leave that account. Ha! But she scared the living hell out. She looked like someone from... what's the name of the movie with all the robots? The Stepford Wives. She looked like a Stepford Wife. And she talked to the audience like they were all kindergartners. Very.
Oh, go throw this frisbee. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, this actually, it's funny that last week's episode isn't being done because it actually fits in with what's going on now, because some of the news that we have is going to reference this directly. We also have to do a side note. The guy playing the drums, DJ Ravi Drums. If you know him immediately, he has the faux hawk and he's just like spazzing out, pretending to play drums. And to tell you how unpopular Donald Trump's inauguration was, he was one of the only people that he could convince to come perform at in the pre-inauguration concert.
That's extremely unfortunate.
Yeah, him and John Voight. To give you an example, you know, the Bruce Springsteen cover band wouldn't perform at the inauguration.
That's pretty sad.
Yeah. So, anyways, yeah, we're gonna move on to the first news item. Nintendo Labo, first week sales sluggish in Japan and UK, and this comes to us from Variety. It appears that Nintendo Labo is struggling to find an audience. It sold only 30% of its initial shipment in Japan its first week, according to sales tracker Media Create, and this is translated by Silicon Era. The educational cardboard construction kits are peripherals for the Nintendo Switch. The Toy-Con 01 variety kit includes a $70 price tag and comes with a physical version of the Labo software and five projects: two RC cars, a fishing rod, a house, a motorbike, and a piano. The Toy-Con 02. See, I see what they're doing there because, you know, the controllers are called Joy-Cons, so this is the Toy-Con. The Toy-Con 02 robot kit is $80 and comes with the software plus a buildable wearable mech suit. And I don't think they mean one that's like 5'9 or anything like that. I just mean who wears it? I guess the controller. The label launched on April 20th worldwide and sold about 119,000 units in Japan its opening week. The variety kit sold over 90,000 units, while the robot kit sold nearly 29,000 units. The launch apparently didn't help Nintendo sell Switches either. Media Create said the console sales saw a slight drop from the previous week. Meanwhile, label failed to dethrone Sony exclusive God of War in the UK, and we all can thank TJ for that. He was the guy who dethroned it. The variety kit came in at number 3 on the nation's physical games chart for the week ending April 28, according to GameSpot. The Robot Kit debuted at number 20. Ubisoft's open-world first-person shooter Far Cry 5 maintained its number 2 position. I have not yet played that. And we'll see if I found out that you actually have to play part of the game before you can even do the arcade editor, which I'm not opposed to. It's just strange to me. There's no word yet on how well Labo sold in the U.S. its first week. Now, I did see the Labo advertising on the door of a GameSpot stop, but I did not see it anywhere. I didn't know where to look. It wasn't even in the Think Geek section. So here's the thing. Now, they released 300,000 units, and that is a very small amount to sell of a toy. And
yeah,
I think Nintendo was attempting to do its make it scarce so that the people increase jams up, but people didn't even buy the small initial shipment of Labo. And I think we can all agree that one of the major factors is price. You know, buying cardboard for $70 and $80 isn't exactly, you know, what's going to influence people to purchase it.
Yeah, because it just seems like really fragile and really easily broken and damaged, and replacements would be really expensive. I do find them, the idea rather interesting, and I think it is one of their better attempts at a thinking outside the box. I mean, it's better than the Virtual Boy.
Yeah, but here's the thing about Toys to Life, and that's basically what this is. Toys to Life is something you want to have a direct impact on your console, and I think TJ talked about this last week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it shouldn't really come as a surprise that Labo hasn't done great. Only not even because of the price. The price is a factor, absolutely, but this was always going to be a niche thing because it's not a traditional game. There is no traditional sense of gaming to it. It's do-it-yourself science kits that you put together and then make and then do other things with them.
Here's how cheap it looks, by the way. The RC car, quote unquote, is just a Joy-Con stuck into. Oh no, I'm sorry. It's the motorcycle. It doesn't move anywhere. It's just you stick it in there. That's it. And then you play a motorcycle game on your Switch. And I'm thinking, who wants to do that?
Now, the stuff like the piano is a little bit more cool, where they actually included a synthesizer program and like a music editing program with it that's kind of light on the mechanics, but you can I've seen people do some incredible stuff with it.
I must say, by the way, before you continue, is that the second week it dropped off heavily, 71% of the Toy-Con 01, the variety kit, the starter kit, to only just under 26,000. So,
to its credit, I haven't seen many people complaining about breaking their Labo kits.
But then again, how many people bought it to break it?
But what I am saying is that seems like, I don't know, I would think if it was a problem, I would probably see at least some people saying, I ripped my Labo apart, this thing's a piece of crap. I haven't really seen anything like that.
Yeah, but and what can you do with it? I mean, here's the thing. The worst thing you can do is get it wet.
I suppose. I don't know. I haven't seen durability as an issue yet. That's not to say it doesn't exist. It's just that it hasn't shown up anywhere where I can see it.
So maybe the only people that bought it are the sensible ones that know how to take care of their stuff.
Maybe.
No, they don't throw their nunchucks into a TV screen.
Extremely possible. Maybe they learned their lesson.
I hope so.
That said, you know, that's a lot of money to price for this. I mean, yeah. $60 to $80. Yes, that's a lot of money to pay for cardboard. I think what I'd like to I would like to see Nintendo maybe try to continue with the experiment, but like learn a lesson from this. Maybe put together some new kits later in the year that are maybe like $15 to $30 at most.
Here's the thing. We're gonna get back to this. So we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
Atari announces Atari pre-sale begins May 30th on Indiegogo, from press release. One of the world's most iconic consumer brands and interactive entertainment producers today announces that pre-sales of its Atari VCS hardware platform will start on May 30th, 2018. The pre-sale is exclusive to Indiegogo and features the time-limited Atari VCS Collector's Edition, featuring the special retro-inspired wood front in addition to the Collector's Edition. In addition to the Collector's Edition, fans will have the option to pre-order the Atari VCS Onyx, a sleek black version. Early bird Atari VCS packages will be offered, including the Onyx, starting at $199 for a limited period of time. Other packages will include the classic joystick and modern controller. Initial Atari VCS shipments are planned for spring 2019. The VCS is a completely new Atari-connected device, designed in California by Atari. The company has partnered with AMD, who provides the Atari VCS custom processor, with radio and graphics technology. The Atari VCS platform will offer support for 4K resolution, HDR, and 60 frames per second content, onboard and expandable storage options, dual-band Wi-Fi, and Bluetooth 5.0, as well as USB 3.0 support. A complete list of Atari VCS product specs will be posted with the presale. Retro-inspired, but not a retro box, the Atari VCS will be a fully customizable entertainment experience. This means access to a vast array of games, media, and streaming content options. As an homage to the past, Atari VCS covers the classics with the included Atari Vault of more than 100 classic games, including all-time arcade and home entertainment favorites like Asteroid, Centipede, Breakout, Missile Command, Gravatar, and Yar's Revenge. A growing list of games, especially a full range of popular modern titles, will be announced at later dates.
So what they're basically saying is this is basically the Steam box, but with an Atari sheen on it, which isn't a bad idea, I'm just saying. It's just that this is less a console and more of a computer, and it's fine. I mean, you know, if you're going to offer, you know, 4K HDR, that's great, and it's going to be interesting, and I'm willing to bet you that you're going to see the usual suspects on the Atari VCS, like Skyrim. You know, I mean, everything you've seen on PC and Switch, you're going to see on the VCS.
I'm hoping that they will have some new games, you know, not just putting on other people's, you know, streaming games, but having their own games produced. That would be interesting to see.
Here's the thing about that, though. That's going to be hard because if it's using... I'm willing to bet you it's using Linux. And a lot of games that people are going to develop for it are going to say, well, I can also release it on Steam, too.
Don't they also own the Dungeons & Dragons game IP, I think it is?
No, not for a while, no.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, I remember Coleco was going to release Tunnels & Trolls. That never got released, to my surprise. The thing that I noticed is that it's going to start at $200. And
not too bad of a price, actually. It's cheaper than the Switch.
Yeah, but what is it going to get you, though? It's apparently not going to get you the controllers, although I'm willing to bet you it's USB. It's going to be USB controller, so you might as well just stick your Xbox One controller on it.
Or PlayStation 1. PlayStation
people 4, tend to use whatever. Well, whatever USB controller, but people tend to use the Xbox style controllers on PC. And the controller, and here's the one thing about it that I have to say, it looks fantastic. Mm-hmm. It is the best looking console in a long while, especially the one with the faux wood on it, because here's the thing about consoles. Since the GameCube, they've all looked the same. The GameCube is the last console that I can remember that actually looked different.
Granted,
it was a tiny little box, but still, it looked unique.
I think the Wii was unique. At least it didn't look like an Xbox or a PlayStation.
Yeah, but it still had the same sort of boxy shape, you know, same rectangular shape, you know. I mean, the GameCube was the last one that I can remember that really looked different.
Yeah.
Like Jonas says, I'm concerned about that $200 price tag because, I mean, it is a little less expensive than the Switch, I guess, but at the same time, Atari games are...
Is that they are crowdfunding, and now people are going to say, well, you know, it's crowdfunding, that means... No, what they're doing is a smart thing here. They don't know if this console is going to sell, so they're just going to sell the console to the people who want it. You know, well, and if it makes enough that they decide we're going to release more of them, fine. You know?
And that's what I'm going to say, is that you got to want this, because...
Yeah.
It's a computer that doesn't do what a computer can do. It's a stream machine that doesn't quite do what, like, I don't know, if you had a PlayStation or an Xbox One or a Switch, it can do, like, those can all do what it does. Or a PC. It's got Atari games on it, but you could also just go out and get yourself one of the many Atari plug-and-play systems.
Get it on Steam.
The latest Flashback is $70. And it doesn't contain all the games. It's like, you know, they parcel them out. So you can either get a Flashback or you can get this and get a little bit more.
But right now they're saying over 100 games. Like, how many is over 100? Because there's like 5,000 Atari games that crashed the industry.
I will note that they said the arcade versions. So yeah, Asteroids for the 2600, it's okay. But if they include Asteroids, you know, arcade version, you know, the vector graphics version, then, you know. And here's the thing. I love MAME. I love MAME. On my old computer on a hard drive, I had 300 arcade game ROMs on it, playing stuff like Ladybug and Mr. Do and Zookeeper and, of course, Pac-Man and all that stuff, you know. And also being able to, by the way, control the pins, the arcade pins. So if it becomes a MAME box, I would be all for it.
Yeah. Like, at this time...
Oh, come on. Admit it. You work for friggin' Twin Galaxies. You must love MAME.
I do love MAME. I also love... but my jam has always been Neo Geo. That's where I am.
Here's the thing. There was another press release announcing a Neo Geo version of Flashback.
Oh, and hell yeah, I know.
I can see TJ's eyes light up from here.
I was so excited when I saw the game list, because 3 Count Bout is on there, and it's the best wrestling game of all time. Bar none. Get out of my face with your Fire Pro Wrestlings. Get out of my face with your Saturday Night Slam Masters. 3 Count Bout is better than all of them by a mile, and I won't hear otherwise. And that alone is enough to get me to stare at that, keep an eye on that thing and see how much it ends up costing. But there's a lot of other good games on there, too.
But here's the exciting part. I'm going to tell you this about the Neo Geo Mini. Apparently, they're going to make it look like an arcade cabinet.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. They've already shown it. Have you seen it? It's an arcade cabinet. With a tiny little joystick and all 4 buttons.
But the thing is that, you know... You see all these others, you know, these home console things, and yeah, that's fine, but you know what? How about something that makes you feel like you're pumping quarters in front of something?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they've made these before, but
little things, yeah, it's like cheap.
They're like keychains, basically.
Yeah.
But this is like it looks kind of like a 5-inch screen.
It's
which,
a 3.5-inch screen.
Yeah, there you go. Which isn't bad.
But here's the thing, you know, you can actually, it has ports on either side, so you can use USB-C controllers with it.
Huzzah. I love it.
And an HDMI port, which means you can plug it onto your TV.
See, and I probably won't have to pay $200 for it.
You never know. Hey, remember, the Neo Geo, for those who don't know, was the first home console, and it cost $600. And that was in mid-90s money.
That's why I didn't buy that console. $600 is too much.
That was getting the actual authentic arcade experience, because it was using an actual arcade board.
That doesn't even include what it costed to get like the actual cartridges or like boards for the game.
$100 for cartridge, if I remember correctly. And the controllers were expensive, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I never got to play it until like decades later when in a pawn shop I got it for like $15 in a pile of games.
I just used a MAME.
Yeah.
They had MAME ROMs for the Neo Geo as well.
My buddy had a Neo Geo Pocket, and he was the star of our classroom because he had such classics as Metal Slug, Biomotor Unitron, Dark Arms. Just like, we thought that was the most mind-blowing crap ever because the Game Boy hadn't come out with a color version yet.
Yeah, the Neo Geo Pocket came out in 98.
Uh-huh. And it blew our minds. It was like as good as console gaming, but on a handheld.
Here's the thing. It had a virtual screen of 256 by 256, 16 PALs per plane, and 64 sprites per frame.
Yeah, it was amazing.
So, yeah.
And so, like, I mean, I'll give SNK this. When they're not making pachinko machines, they actually put some effort. They actually put some effort forth into their work.
Unlike Konami, who's making pachinko machines but not doing any effort.
Yeah, I wish Konami would go back to making games again.
Has there been a game that came out as quietly and left as quietly as the new Metal Gear Solid game?
Metal Gear Survive?
Yeah.
Yeah, that thing just like slipped under the radar and quietly went away in the course of like a week. What a sad story. I mean, it was the Hideo Kojima game without Hideo Kojima, so.
I miss the Vectrex. I never had one, but I always wanted one. Do you know what the Vectrex was?
What is it?
It was a gaming console that actually was a gaming console that specifically made wireframe games, like Asteroid-type games. And it was amazing. And I played on the... It was actually a TV screen with a joystick attached to it. And it made vector graphics like nothing else. It was built to make vector graphics. And you even had the overlays that you use on arcade games to give it color. You know, you put the thing on top of the screen. Mindstorm was the shit. It also came with a light pen, which blew my mind at the time. Keep in mind, this was out in 82.
Yeah.
Just look up Vectrex, and you'll go, oh my god, I want one. Even if it's dated. Here's the thing, vector graphics are never dated.
That's kind of cool. I like that joystick.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it looks awesome.
It's like this was a console unto itself. Like, having a console that had its own TV screen was mind-blowing. And you'll notice it was arcade style, which means it was taller than it was wide.
Mm-hmm.
So it was actually an arcade experience.
That is pretty neat.
Yeah. We'll wait until you actually play something like Mindstorm. Anyways, we're getting way off the thing. So, wrapping up on the Atari, I'm a wait and see on this, you know. I will say, if I had the money right now, I would definitely back it on Indiegogo. But I really want to see what it does. I mean, we'll see if it avoids some of the pitfalls of the Ouya. I think the biggest problem with the Ouya was just the controller was really, really bad. Had the Ouya had a good controller, I think it would have really taken off even more.
Yeah, I mean, it's an Indiegogo, so at the very least, they're only going to make as much as they sell, so yeah. I guess that's one way to turn a profit, although I don't know how much they are in the hole on advertising and all that stuff at this point.
Well, right now, Atari's having an interesting thing. They just pulled Roller Coaster Tycoon 3 because of a legal thing with Frontier. For those of you who don't know who Frontier is, they're the ones who made Elite Dangerous. And this was one of their earlier games, and they're trying to get Atari to, cough up some of the money they made to give them their royalties for doing Super, Roller Coaster Tycoon 3. It's interesting, it wasn't delisted from Steam. It's just not available, which tells me that it's going to be coming back really soon. So I think there's just a lot of legal wrangling going on with that. I don't care because I got Roller Coaster Tycoon 3 from GOG anyway. Mm-hmm. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Take it away, Scott.
Eastbound looks to scratch the retro Zelda itch from Destructoid. A lot of indie games seem to fly under the radar due to either a lack of marketing budget or being relatively early in development. Eastbound is one such game, but one of the developers behind it shot Destructoid an email. Elias Vigilone, founder of Panic Art Studios, dev behind Hero Siege, sent along a tweet that was going a bit, gaining a bit of traction. It showed off a few screens of the very much in work in progress title that highlighted the different types of environments that Eastbound would feature. And the game is heavily inspired by Zelda and Alundra, a PS1 exclusive title. It also features some nice pixel art and is being made entirely with Game Maker Studio. While there are tons of screenshots floating around the net, I did happen to uncover an early trailer that promises the game will be coming to PC and PS4. I'm not sure how likely the 2018 release date will be, but even if it does miss that date, Eastbound looks like a title worth keeping an eye.
So this is going to be a PC. This is going to be a PC PS4 game, which tells me, oh yeah, it means Steam and Xbox One and Switch about a year later.
That's an interesting twist of events.
And the gameplay, if you've seen the video, it's very 8-bit-ish, even though it has like 16-bit style graphics.
I would say 16-bit, yeah, not 8-bit.
No, but when I say it's 8-bit, I mean in terms of gameplay. In terms of very simple gameplay, but it looks gorgeous, and, you know, there is a place for top-down RPGs in the Zelda
style. Yeah. I really am interested to know if Destructoid thought it was Alundra, or if that was something that the designer himself said,
The designer on Twitter has been openly talking about how it's heavily inspired by Zelda and Alundra.
I don't care about Zelda, because everybody is inspired by Zelda. Alundra, on the other hand, is something that I'm really interested in, because even though Alundra is sort of a Zelda knockoff, it's probably the best Zelda knockoff I've ever played. It's for one thing, they put a jump button in the game.
And that's what this game has. You'll see him jumping traps.
Another, the puzzles were super intense in Alundra. I really liked that game for just like how hard it made me think in addition to the combat itself. So if that's what that guy is going for, I clap my hands for him because I love that.
Go to the link and watch the teaser and you'll see for yourself.
That's cool. I'll definitely check, keep my eye on this because
I'll probably get it on PS4.
I'll see what happens on Switch, on Steam.
Yeah, because Oceanborn was nice, but it felt like a mini Zelda game. It wasn't the length that Zelda usually goes. So I'm interested to see how long and how much depth this game has.
Right, and Alundra was like, I'm gonna gush about it a little bit more. That game was super dark. That, like, people died in that game in, like, horrible ways, and I remember just, like, being as young as I was when I played that game. That was shocking to me.
Now you're making me think of Crystalis, because that was kind of dark.
Yeah, so, and the art in this game looks beautiful so far. It really does look lush. It looks like they got some green forests and some icy caves, which... F ice levels, because you know that once you step on that ice, you're going to slide all the way across.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to have to do a puzzle like that, or whatever. As long as the rest of the game is pretty and cool, I'll put up with it.
You talked about a mini Zelda. You know what that reminded me of? That reminded me of Star Wars Yoda Stories. The old little PC game. So it was almost like a Flash game, even though it wasn't. Did you ever play that? It was just procedurally generated things in which you played Luke and you had to go through. And it was sort of like playing Zelda with Luke.
No, I don't think I've played that now.
A more insubstantial game you could not find. It was a $5 game before there were $5 games. But I enjoyed it because it was quick and cheap and easy. You know, and just... Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item, and I know this sort of thing is going to make TJ and And Scott, it's going to make your he's going to chill you to the bone. Nintendo starts moving to a Wii-like non-gamer strategy for the Switch, and this comes to us from Ars Technica. After a launch year, quote-unquote, aimed at Nintendo fans and avid game players, Nintendo is planning to take less traditional game players in the Switch's second fiscal year. That's according to outgoing Nintendo president Tatsuya Kimishima, who spoke about widening the system's appeal in a recent investor Q&A. Quote, in this second year, the initiatives we are planning come for our recognition that we also have to challenge ourselves to delivering the Nintendo Switch into the hands of consumers who have never played a Nintendo platform before and to those who have played before but not recently, Kimishima said. Those, quote-unquote, initiatives include a software lineup that are, quote-unquote, meant to attract people, including those who have not been playing video games recently. If that phrasing sounds familiar, it's because Nintendo used a similar language in describing the Blue Ocean strategy behind the Wii over a decade ago. That strategy brought us games like Wii Sports and Wii Fit, which was, quote-unquote, aimed to bring in lapsed gamers and to capture non-gamers. So what they're essentially saying is they want people who don't like video games to play their video games.
You know, yeah. I mean, there's only... You know, some things are not for everyone, you know, and I wish corporations would get that. You know, it's like not everybody wants to buy your thing, and it's okay, but Nintendo apparently doesn't care and wants to attract
also, I'd like
people
to know,
that are like...
A lot of people have been saying, well, you know, they're still coming out with a Smash Brothers and a, you know, and this and that and the other. And I'm saying, yeah, well, the Wii also had a Smash Brothers and it had a Zelda game and had a Mario game and all that stuff. You know what it didn't have? Third-party support.
Yeah. I mean... Clearly, Nintendo isn't going to stop making Nintendo games. They're just making other things, which means they're probably going to put initiatives further behind things like Labo and
other
products.
Yeah, I was about to say, this sort of makes the appearance of Labo make a little more sense. Like, okay, now we get it.
I mean, Nintendo was originally a toy company. They made card games.
But you see, they're not a toy company. They don't have any other... Where do they make their money? They don't make their money from toys. I mean, unless you consider the console as a toy, and I think that's what happens. You know, we said this before. You know, they treat their consoles like toys. Like the Wii, they limited availability because that's what you do with a popular toy, like a Power Ranger or a Furby. But you're expected to hang around with that console for years.
Uh huh.
And people who buy it as a fad will play it for a few months and say, oh, okay. And they're not going to buy anything else you make. And then you end up with carnival games.
See, but it's different from where it was with, like, the shovelware era of the Wii. We're actually seeing a lot of third-party support on the Switch, especially as far as
the other consoles, no.
No, that's not true. It's getting a lot of support as far as indies go, and
yeah, that's going to draw. Here's the thing, you know, are people who like things like Labo going to buy the Binding of Isaac?
No, but people that like Zelda are going to buy Zelda, and then they'll explore the other games that are on there.
We had a Zelda game too. As a matter of fact, Breath of the Wild is supposed to be a Wii U game.
But what I'm saying is that. You have the games like Zelda, Mario Odyssey, Smash Brothers. Those things come out, and then in between, you've got a wealth of indie games to go through and fiddle around with.
I'm hard pressed to think of people who like Smash Brothers playing games like The Binding of Isaac or any other indie games.
No, but they'll totally play Magical Drop 3 or Night in the Woods.
Here's the problem with indie games. Nintendo still doesn't know how to do their fucking store. And people who are savvy enough to want to buy indie games are not going to buy it from Nintendo because guess what happens? You do not have a linked account. And if you somehow lose that Switch, oh, guess what? You're going to have to pay for it all over again.
And if you somehow lose your Switch?
The other problem is storage
space.
The other problem is storage space. I mean, you still have that problem with the storage space on the Switch.
Yeah, but that's been the thing since the beginning. If anyone who's gotten into a Wii a Switch at this point knows that.
That doesn't mean they're going to buy games, you know, that they don't want. Are they going? Okay, they're going to fill it with Smash Brothers and Zelda, and well, they can't fit Zelda in there. But, you know, you have to pay extra just to play other games because you have to buy more SD cards.
A lot of the indie games aren't that space heavy. Like, most of them are games like Night in the Woods or Magical Drop, and I think there's only like a handful that are...
Here's a question. Are you going to buy those games on a Switch or Steam on your computer?
I'm going to buy them on Switch because I can take the Switch wherever I feel like going with it.
You say that now.
And I say that because I literally didn't buy Night in the Woods because I never thought of a time when I would play it, and then I bought it on my Switch because I was going to be traveling.
Well, now you can buy it on your Atari VCS.
Well, like, Night in the Woods is probably not that expensive to begin with.
Right, and I'm saying that, like, I'm not saying I'm the case for everybody. I'm just saying that the versatility of being able to carry a game with you wherever you feel like going is still something to be considered.
See, here's the thing, though. That's fine, but what Nintendo does affects what everybody else does for that platform. And if Nintendo decides, you know what, we're going to go for with a casual crowd again, are you telling me that you're not going to have a glom of... Here's the thing. If you thought there was shovelware on the Wii when you had to put it on a disc, we've seen what shovelware did to Steam.
Right, but...
Imagine that shovelware just glomming onto Steam now. I mean, onto on the Switch store. And it's going to drown out those other games because here's the thing. You may be a game reviewer, you know, it may be your job, but a lot of people it's not. You know, how are they going to know about, say, Shovel Knight if they've never heard of it before? And all they Nintendo's see is crap in the store. And it's just one game among thousands.
Nintendo's eStore seemed a lot more curated compared to a lot of them. I mean, the fact of the matter is, if somebody's got a good game and they come to
their
Nintendo...
curation, with their little Nintendo seal of quality. That didn't stop Carnival Games 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
But the Switch hasn't had that problem, is what I'm saying.
Not yet.
I don't know if it will. I mean, as long as they're making the decision as to who gets to come over to the Switch and who doesn't... I think Nintendo can. I think Nintendo can get away with fiddling around and seeing what happens.
They didn't get away with it, though. They were in serious financial straits by the time the Wii U was out.
I'm talking about right now.
And yeah, I'm talking about right now too. Here's the thing about companies is that they tend to think that their success means that they can just do whatever now. I mean, it happened to Sony with the PS3. It happened to Microsoft, the Xbox 360. It's starting to happen now with the PS4. I mean, Sony's making some really dumb, mistakes right now. And this is the first sign that Nintendo's deciding, yeah, we have the Switch. We're selling well. Let's do this crap instead of focus on what we're succeeding with.
I mean, but I'll also argue that they did get away with it once. You had shovelware all over the Nintendo, but even if we don't like it,
they didn't get away with it because I'm going to give you an example: the Nintendo 64. What happened to GameCube? The GameCube severely undersold.
I'll give you an example where they did get away with it, and it was single-handedly the Wii Fit. The Wii Fit sold enough to cover the Wii for the rest of its life.
Yeah,
But
is that what you want to say? Well, our number one software is Wii Fit.
Come on,
hardcore gamers, how'd that help the Wii U?
If it sells gangbusters, then it helps Nintendo.
Did it sell the Wii U?
I mean, it wasn't. I don't remember
what happened to the Wii U. But no, because no one bought a Wii U because they.
No, but it sold the Wii. It sold the hell out of the Wii.
Yeah, because it was garbage that only people who didn't like video games used. Did you?
But even if you don't like
it, weight by a console.
But that's what I'm saying, though, is that even if you don't like it, I don't like it, Scott doesn't like it. It sold so well that it would allow
Nintendo. It sold so
Nintendo
well that Nintendo
to...
was deep in deep financial straits afterwards, with the Wii U and all that stuff. People stopped making games for it. EA completely dropped the Wii. Activision completely dropped the Wii.
I would think Nintendo would have some if it was in that dire straits that they wouldn't repeat their mistakes of the past. That they would have we need to focus on those hardcore gamers, get those old fans back.
Well, that's what the Switch did, and now Nintendo's saying, okay, thank you, you can go back to your holes now. We want to see if we can capture non-gamers.
But I don't think that is what they're saying. I think they're saying
what are you talking about? That's exactly what they just said! They said it! You want me to quote them again?
They are saying...
We're planning to... We want to get people who don't buy video games back. That's exactly what they said, literally. We aim to bring in lapsed gamers. Meant to attract people who have not been playing video games recently.
But they are not saying that they're going to stop making other games.
Says who? I mean, they made their Zelda, they made their Mario, they're going to make their Smash Brothers. So you can shut up, we made your things, now go away. And you can play with those for the next year. How many Zelda games were released on the Wii? Just out of curiosity.
Two at least.
One.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to count Hyrule Warriors. That is not a Zelda game. That's Dynasty
Twilight,
Warriors
Twilight
with
Princess
Zelda.
And Skyward Sword.
That was the only Zelda proper Zelda game they released was Twilight Princess, and that was it. It took so long. Remember, they were going to release Breath of the Wild on the Wii U. It was being developed as a Wii U game, and they delayed it when they decided they're going to.
They did
the thing.
Put Wind Waker on the Wii U HD
GameCube,
remake.
That was the GameCube Wind Waker. I don't know.
It was
Twilight Princess was a launch title. On the Wii, and it was also a GameCube game.
Right, but at the same time, I'm going to say this right now: Bayonetta 3, Mario Tennis Aces, Octopath Traveler, Super Smash Brothers. You cannot say that Nintendo is completely shutting down their game system.
Bayonetta 2 on the Wii, they were
no
terrible.
Bayonetta.
Dragon Quest is going to the Switch. I'm not going to get it on the Switch, but it is going to the Switch. That's another game.
And people are talking about Pokemon on a console, and here's the thing. Pokemon has never been successful on a console. It's only been successful on a handheld, because it's a handheld RPG. You really can't replicate what it does on a console. And you say, well, the Switch is a handheld too. Fine.
Yes, it is.
But people are going to play Pokemon on the 3DS. They're not going to play it on the Switch.
I would say that they would play it on the Switch more than they'll play it on the 3DS.
If you say
so. Konami got away with doing their own Pokemon game, so I don't see why not.
But
like I said, here's the thing. I hope Nintendo noticed that no one bought the Labo. And that was a message to them saying, no, we don't want that. I'm hoping that Nintendo saw the Labo be universally say, get that shit away from us. We want actual games. Where's Pikmin 4?
I'm on the other end of this. I'm going to say Nintendo.
Kid Icarus, a real Kid Icarus.
I'm going to sit on the other end of this, and I'm going to also say that Kid Icarus was great. You back off.
Where's Kid Icarus? I mean,
do you know what? That's a good point. There should have been a huge line of Kid Icarus games all the way from Nintendo, the original Nintendo, to now. But there hasn't been. There's been like two Kid Icarus games, and then he shows
so
up
bad.
In Smash Brothers. That's not enough.
The handheld version of Kid Icarus was so bad, they actually had to get something to prop up your handheld console because the controls were just batshit crazy.
Mm-hmm.
They could have had a series with Crystalis and with Battle of Olympus, and there's so many games they could have explored a franchise with, but they never did.
How about a new franchise?
Yeah, that would be great. And
how about a new franchise? I mean, Nintendo, you know, Mario, Zelda,
Star Wars, Mario, Zelda, Star Wars.
And they couldn't even get it. They couldn't even make a good Star Fox game.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they haven't in a long ass time.
But that's the point, isn't it?
I mean. To an extent, yeah, but, like, I don't know. They probably just don't see
of things, and what they want are... See, here's the thing about gamers, is that they're skinflints. And Nintendo wants people who spend money like a drunken sailor, and they see the cat, the people who don't play video games. We want those, because we know our fans will buy any shit that we're going to put out anyway. That's what they're actually saying, now that I think about it. Yeah, our fans will buy any shit we put out, you know. And there's no... Here's the thing. There's been no good Pokemon console game either. Pokemon Stadium?
I disagree with that because, you know, there was a long, long period of time where I didn't buy a GameCube. And I didn't buy all those N64 games. And I just stopped buying Nintendo stuff. And I went over to the Sony PlayStation and played there instead. And I don't think I'm the only one that did that.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're playing your RPGs on your PlayStation. They're giving you what you want.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I'm playing on PlayStation at war on Steam.
Yeah, well, I was about to say, if you can't... Here's the thing about the game we just talked about, you know, Eastbound, is that, well, it'll probably be on Switch and Xbox One eventually because it's a third-party game. But, you know, if I really needed to play it, I said, I'll just buy it on Steam.
Yeah, I'll probably get it on Steam, and that's where I'll be playing it. And
I really want to play Star Wars Yoda Stories again, though.
But yeah, I'm digging in on the opposite end of this spectrum. Mario Tennis Aces is going to come out. Bayonetta 3 is going to come out. Octopath Traveler is going
to
come out.
I'm just going to wait for the Steam versions of Bayonetta 2 and 3. I don't care.
Eventually, they're going to have Super Smash Brothers. So it's not like they're stopping
making games. No, it's this year, Super Smash Brothers.
But it's not like
they're making games. Why even bother? Just get the Wii U version and pop it in your Switch.
Because it's going to be a new game. That's actually been confirmed.
A new game. It's never been a new game.
It's going to be a new game. They've confirmed that at this point.
Any iteration, aside from maybe the roster, they added Bayonetta to the Smash Brothers roster. Whoopee.
I mean, they're going to make a new game. That's all there is to it. They've already confirmed it at this point.
Yeah, smash the A button, brothers.
Anyone who's played Melee will tell you that if you think that Melee is the same as Brawl, you're a fool.
Do you think they'll port other Zelda games to the Switch, like
Breath? And make you pay for them, sure.
Like what? Wind Waker?
Yeah.
So oh, they're getting ready to launch the online services.
Wait. But can't you play the Wii U Wii version on the Switch anyway?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
They
already discovered the GameCube inside the Switch.
But they just announced the online services recently, and I'm almost certain that the Nintendo, what is that thing that they used to do for the Wii U and Wii? The Virtual Console is probably coming along with that.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, well, I know Scott's favorite part about that is they release two games a month. Yeah, what's the library of the NES alone again? Oh, over 10,000 games? Oh, we're going to release two a month. You know, I said this for years and years. If Nintendo really wants to do it, just do a $9.99 subscription service where you have the access of all Nintendo games ever released. You can only play one at a time, but Nintendo could make a mint that way. But they're just going to release. They're just going to count on you playing the buying the first Zelda five times, like you did with Paul.
That's fine, as long as they release a new game here and there.
That's fine. I'll buy the same shit over and over again, literally.
And as long as indies keep coming out on it.
We'll see.
They're putting enough padding in there to make it work for now.
We do have listener feedback. Go ahead, TJ.
Alrighty. From Ralph. Hi, guys. Sorry. Pardon. From Ralph. Hi, guys. First of all, congratulations to 500 episodes. There are not many good podcasts There are not many good podcasts who have such a long episode list. Long because nearly every podcast of your show is about an hour. It's nice to hear Paul on the show again. He has such a good humor. I love it. Regarding the topics in this episode, I really like pop figures. I have all 11 from Magic the Gathering, all from Back to the Future, and all from Michael Jackson. I like them as decoration in my gaming room.
You know, that's actually a good point. I do have some figurines that I have on my bookshelf. But like I said, you know, you'll never be able to collect all the pop figurines. It's impossible. So you just have to find the one thing that you really, really like and just use them. I mean, you may hate pop figurines, but say if you're a really big fan of God of War, you know, if there's a Kratos pop, you're going to get it, aren't you?
there's a Kratos Nendoroid that looks better.
Yeah. But no, I mean, if you have all versions of a character, really. By the way, 11 pops from Magic the Gathering? What in the world could they possibly... See, here's the... I have not been up on Magic the Gathering lore in years.
The Planeswalkers. I have a few of them myself.
I know about the Planeswalkers, but it's like the individual ones? I could not tell you.
Yeah, I don't remember their names, but there's like the Black Mage, the Blue Mage, White Mage. That's not really helping. But
no, it's not.
Yeah, that's the problem with Magic the Gathering is the lore was very easily forgettable. You just played this card game and these characters were there and you never really learned about them. They were just
one expansion
there.
Was friggin' Arabian Nights.
Yeah.
Hmm. Anyways, these games like Skylanders, Lego's Dimensions, and so on, I don't like it that much. It's too expensive, and the game itself is not that interesting, in my opinion. Which, yeah, I would agree. The games themselves have never been much past a little bit of, like, you know, you mash up worlds between the Lego Dimensions, and you get characters from the different characters from the Skylanders to interact with each other. The games themselves have never been all that intense.
You know, I think that's why amiibos have worked, is that they actually just involve you in games that you already own.
Yeah, absolutely. It's basically unlocking some extra DLC that otherwise, like, not like consequential DLC that, like, changes the game, but just like some neat little Easter egg add-ons that that make things a little
Even
bit more
skin,
fun.
You know, I mean, if it's like DLC for, you know, and you could do it with other consoles. Suppose you had Halo, right? And you bought an Arbiter figurine, you know, not only would it unlock an Arbiter in Halo, but it would maybe unlock an Arbiter in Dead or Alive, and unlock the Arbiter in Forza Horizons, and unlock the Arbiter in Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah, that'd be neat.
Yeah, wouldn't you like to see the Arbiter in Red Dead Redemption?
I mean, as it is, I like being able to store my bot footage, or my training bot for Smash Bros. On my Bowser figure, and then I also like being able to race in Bowser gear when I play Mario Kart.
You know, for a moment I thought you were talking about BattleBots. I was like, you engage in BattleBots?
Not quite. I would love to, but you can't store that on an amiibo. You'll break it.
No. Well, you know, I mean, I would create the kind of BattleBot that is heavy and flips other BattleBots on their side.
You mean the best one? The champion?
I don't watch BattleBots. I just know I've seen the bots in passing. I'm just thinking that's what I would make.
Mm-hmm. It was nice to hear that you're a Star Trek fan, or something similar to that. Did you watch the latest series, Discovery? I think it was quite nice so far, even if it was strange to see the Klingons like they were.
Yeah, pass on Discovery. A, I'm not paying for Star Trek. And B, I'm not paying for that Star Trek.
Have you seen it, Scott?
I've seen it, and I'm going to agree with Jonah. Pass. Let's go on to the next line.
I don't care about the twist that it was all in the Mirror Universe. Fuck that.
That's some strong feelings. But then again, you guys have watched like all of
Here's
it, haven't
the thing.
You?
I've dropped... I was never a fan of the Abramsverse anyway. So it's sort of like after Insurrection, which I didn't like anyway... It's like, okay, I'm done. You know, they don't know what they're doing with Star Trek. That's why I dumped Star Wars a long time ago, too. I mean, as soon as the Phantom Menace came out, I said, yeah, I'm done. No more. It's you know, I am not like a lot of nerds out there in which I will cling to a franchise because it's the franchise. Like MST3K, I hate the reboot MST3K, so I'm not going to watch it, you know? And it's not like I'm going to give it a chance, because obviously I gave Star Trek Next Generation a chance, and I gave Deep Space Nine a chance, and I gave Voyager a chance. I gave Enterprise a chance, and that's why I dropped Enterprise.
Yeah, I mean, what, you don't like a Star Trek universe where the Beastie Boys figure in prominently?
Here's the thing. From what I understand, Star Trek Beyond was really good, so I haven't seen it yet, but I heard it's really good. I just don't have the time to watch it. And if I do like it, it's not because it's going to be a Star Trek thing. It's going to be, because to me it's not Star Trek. It's just some alternate version of Star Trek. Well, it is an alternate version, but I'm just saying it's like a science fiction show with people who claim the same names as the other characters. And Zachary Quinto is an asshole.
Yeah, I'm enjoying Orville. I feel like it's just a nice new sci-fi show all on its own.
Different Man, universe. I want to like it, but I can't shake the feeling that Seth MacFarlane wants it to be Galaxy Quest so badly.
You know, here's the thing. If you've watched any Star Trek episodes, you can see him cutting and pasting the old episodes onto it. like For the World is Hollow and I Have Touched the Sky and some other episodes. No, it is bad. It is just so bad. I mean, it's good if you never watched a Star Trek in your life. Or maybe good, because
he wants to do Star Trek,
but he has to include dick jokes for Fox. Oh yeah, it's a comedy.
Well, it's more of an example of them not being as disciplined as Picard. I mean, he's not flying the flagship; he's flying a scout exploration ship, and he gets thrown into these situations that are over his head. And I don't know about you, Jonah, but I did not see the Star Trek episode where they beheaded a human and then stabbed it over and over again. What Star Trek episode was that?
I mean, Seth MacFarlane's ripped off everything he's ever made. Even Family Guy is a ripoff. It's a ripoff of Wait Till Your Father Comes Home. He is unfunny beyond belief.
That's your opinion.
Go he watch has Million Ways he to Die in the West and get back to me.
He has moments. And most of those moments are in American Dad. But that said, like, the Orville is... I know people that have very much enjoyed it. I know people that have... that are Star Trek fans that have enjoyed it. That said, I also know people that have seen Galaxy Quest and are with me on this when I say it's really sort of an attempt at Galaxy Quest.
You know, the thing about Seth MacFarlane is that he tends to play every movie that he's in that's the genre, you feel like it's a time traveler in there. Like in A Million Ways to Die in the West, it felt like the main characters were actually people from the 20th century who took a time machine back to the West. Which, of course, he had to do the cultural reference with having Doc Brown there. But in the Orville, it feels like the most elaborate Star Trek cosplaying ever.
We should watch Galaxy Quest and do an entire episode about that.
Oh, well, I saw it in theaters when I did too. Did. See, here's the thing. I saw Batman Mask of the Phantasm in a theater, and I was the only person in the theater. And then video said, "Oh, everybody loves it." It's like, yeah, I saw it in the movies.
I mean, I just don't think you can do much better for like a spoof of that style than having Alan Rickman, Tony Shalhoub, Sigourney Weaver, like Tim Allen back when he was good, and To an extent. No. I mean...
No, because the Tim Allen character was basically Kirk, and the Orville's character, Mercer, is like Roger Wilco, but not as goofy. It's two different people entirely.
Uh-huh. I thought we were talking about the ship. Yeah, no, they're different characters.
Actually, they're what's called, if you watch Galaxy Quest the reboot, at the end of the movie, you'll notice it's a lot like the Orville.
The characters'
personalities have changed a bit.
Is there a reboot to Galaxy Quest?
Yes, in the movie itself, remember? Galaxy Quest.
Oh.
Yeah, and they had Jane Doe as a new crew member.
That's pretty good. That movie is wonderful.
And, of course, Guy Fleegman is a new character as the security officer. Anyways, moving on with the letter.
Sure. To the question of the week, my choice of the Parker board game would be Monopoly, because I played so often as a little kid, and I didn't have any other board game.
You know what's funny about Monopoly is that it's a lot better when you realize that if you land on a property and you don't buy it, it has to go up for auction. And some people don't buy the property with that strategy in mind. And that's where the real strategy of the game is. And no one plays it like that.
Monopoly was good because it made you all enemies of everyone across and around you.
Well, no, you did have temporary alliances.
I've never experienced that.
You did have temporary alliances. You know it.
I had siblings in my home, and we played full contact Monopoly.
So did you fling the thimble at each other?
The banker,
you know,
the was always
the
worst.
You know, everybody
one.
Says that everybody wants to be the car. No, everybody fought over being the dog in that. Everybody wanted to be a little schnauzer. Because you could have him stand on his head.
In my house, it was the ship. The ship was the good one.
The ship actually was not with the original game. That was...
Right.
Yeah.
It was in the 90s.
Okay.
The new title song is way better than before, but not as good as the one you had very many episodes ago. I don't know which episode it was. Not the RoboCop or Mass Effect one.
Yep.
What song are you using?
We did the Field of... Did you not listen to the 500th episode?
I never listened to our show.
Only in fanfare, just for the 500th episode.
Did you? What was it?
It's Field of Camralin by David Arkansas.
Ah, well...
And it's his. It was an album. It was a CD that he released in like '98 or something like that, which he did his own interpretations of the Lord of the Rings music. I mean, Lord of the Rings, and he did it by music.
That sounds pretty neat.
I think he's from Ireland, so it has sort of an Irish feel to it. But if you listen to Field of Cormelin, it is very celebratory. I'm gonna look it up here. Alan Arkenstone. Yes, and that obviously that's not his real name. Okay, I found the YouTube. So you can listen to this later, and you can see what I'm talking about.
I'm disappointed it wasn't Beastie Boys Sabotage.
Well, that's the Google page. Damn it. But yeah, I mean, and I actually did the full song, which is 2.5 minutes. Although I will say, you know, it was broken up by us. There we go. But yeah, it's... Did you listen to it, Scott?
No. But I'll listen to it now.
Okay, well, you can listen to it after, and you can talk about next week what it's what you thought of it.
Yeah.
Anyways, wrap up the email.
keep up on the good work, guys, and thank you for your podcast. Greetings from Germany, Ralph.
Yep. Thank you for writing in, Ralph.
Yep, and we hope more of you write in. I mean, there is no statute of limitations on episode 500 if you want to talk about, you know, because I know we have long-time listeners. I mean, we do have download counts, so there are people downloading and listening. The problem is that they're also very quiet. Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our hit gaming history articles. We enjoy feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave some iTunes comments. You never listen to the podcast?
I love it.
You like listening to your own voice?
I live the podcast.
Yeah, I don't like listening to my own voice.
Aw. I don't like listening to my own voice either, but I have to listen to it anyway because I'm editing.
Of course.
And sometimes I listen to it from beginning to end just to kill time.
Okay. I'm happy to hear that you like the dulcet sounds of our voice enough to hang in there.
Well, I had you on a live episode. Well, it wasn't live. It was more like on location at E3, which was cool.
Yeah!
And the best part about that is our voice is really clear because we're not doing it online. We're doing it right there.
Mm-hmm. And the crisp, clean air of L.A.
And also, I have to note that at that point, TJ was 3 beers to the wind. And moving forward... He did not stop at 3.
Nice. Yeah, because, I mean, like, 3 beers to the wind for most people is like, I don't know, drinking a near beer for me.
And keep in mind, this was at Devolver Digital, and all the beer was free.
Indeed. And I took advantage.
And we actually got to play against each other in Absolver.
Yes.
So, here's the thing. I heard people talking good things about Absolver, but it doesn't seem to have made any sort of dent in the mind space.
No, I don't know that many people play that game anymore. I really enjoyed it. It was a really interesting concept as far as like open world kung fu martial arts. It just didn't have enough to catch on, I don't think.
I think it was just a little too, I'm not going to say amateurish, but it felt a little bit too much like bales of wire and string holding it together.
I would say blank slate. It was really, really, really vague in everything it did.
Well, that's the. Can you imagine how many more people would really enjoy it if they got to kit out their characters with cosmetic stuff, like what they're wearing, what they're and all that.
And you could do that in Absolver. You could get new pieces of equipment and clothing. It's just that none of them were all that interesting.
But that's what I mean, you know. I mean, interesting stuff.
The game's aesthetic was about as I don't know. I guess bland. The word would be the game's aesthetic was about as colorful as a Pueblo house. I think that really didn't do any favor. They really, really, really relied on that martial arts to sell. And it's good martial arts. It's good making up your own style and everything.
Especially since you kept on attacking me.
Yeah. They just needed some more life in that game.
Yeah.
And by life, I mean colorful creativity.
Well, here's the thing. If you saw an Absolver 2, would you be interested in finding out more about it?
Let me put it this way. If Nexon took Absolver and put a coat of Dungeon Fighter Online paint on it, I would play the holy hell out of that.
I'm gonna tell Devolver Digital that. Get on it, Devolver. Actually, I know Devolver Digital published it. I wonder who was the developer.
I mean, look at Battle Chasers. That game, I don't think that mechanically that game looks that interesting, but its character designs and world is so badass looking that I want to buy it anyways.
I ask you a question. Are you still playing Agents of Mayhem?
I have never played Agents of Mayhem.
Oh, someone did. Oh, no, wait. No, what was the game? Oh, no, I'm sorry. The game that was made by the Lawbreakers devs.
Oh, Radical Heights.
Yeah.
That one's fun.
Okay. Now, picture Absolver married with Radical Heights.
That would be awesome, too.
You know, Absolver mixed with Insane Clown Posse.
Actually, Absolver mixed with Radical Heights already exists in a certain way. It's called Double Dragon Neon.
Yeah. That's one of the games I downloaded, by the way. I got the Streets of Rage collection backwards compatible as one of the free things on Xbox Live Marketplace.
Double Dragon Neon?
No, Streets of Rage, the Collector's Edition, which has all the previous Streets of Rages.
Streets of Rage 3 is the best.
Yeah. So anyways, we will see you next week, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with Nintendo. This has been a Nintendo-heavy podcast. If it wasn't about Nintendo, it was about a game that wanted to be Nintendo. I am at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
I am at Johnny Chugs.
I am at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week.